Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast with me, Ariane Morrissey. This week, we're dissecting the potential of ammonia to take off as a marine fuel. With the first ammonia dual-fuel engine delivered recently, and the first ammonia-powered commercial ships expected to enter service in the coming year, we'll ask what is likely to happen next, both on the production and demand sides. To do that, I'm pleased to welcome Sophia Furstenberg-Stott, partner at Furstenberg Maritime Advisory, which she founded in 2017 and provides strategic advice for the sustainable transition of the industry. Previously, Sophia led technology innovation programs at Maersk and the early development of DNV's Green Shipping Advisory Portfolio, and also served as Maritime Director for the Ammonia Energy Association. Welcome to the podcast, Sophia.
Thank you very much.
So when we look at the alternative fuel order book, the latest figures from DNV showed that the number of ammonia-fueled vessels on order remains low compared to LNG or methanol. But on the other hand, it is worth noting that July saw the first ammonia bunker vessel added to the order book. So how do you interpret those figures? Do you see signs that ammonia is gaining momentum as a marine fuel, even though the number of vessels on order remains relatively small?
Thank you for that question. I took a look at the database from the Ammonia Energy Association. They have a database there called the Low Emissions Ammonia Data, abbreviated LEED database. And it has helped me to draw a little bit more detailed picture. So since they launched their first updates in September last year, they have seen the number of announced ammonia-fueled and ammonia-ready vessels to grow from the exact numbers that they provide is from 263 to 385. So that's actually a 30% increase from the last year. And 40% of those vessels announced are ammonia-fueled. The second quarter of this year, they saw the announcement of 16 ammonia-fueled and 14 ammonia-ready vessels. And so I think that in the Ammonia Energy Association's database, the numbers are not necessarily the same as the one that we have from DNV. But out of these numbers, five ammonia-fueled vessels are in operation. And these are supply vessels and tugboats. And they entered into the water in 23 and 24, so very recently. And according to the AEA, there are 30 ammonia-ready vessels in operation as of June this year. And this primarily includes ammonia carriers, bulk carriers, oil carriers, container vessels, and supply vessels. And so looking at those kind of figures, I definitely see signs that ammonia as a marine fuel is gaining momentum. And by the way here, listeners may wonder what is the difference between ammonia-fueled and ammonia-ready. So the definition that I refer to here, that's of vessels that typically have provisions for ammonia fuel supply systems. They have ammonia release mitigation systems. They have something called Tank C, tanks for ammonia fuel storage. And they typically have retrofit packages that exists for those engines to use ammonia as a fuel. So ammonia ready doesn't mean that the ship is typically going to operate on ammonia as a fuel today, tomorrow, or it actually may never do so, but you can retrofit it to operate on ammonia. So my summary on that question is that yes, definitely there are signs that ammonia fuel is gaining momentum, although we can recognize that it's at a lower level than for LNG and methanol.
So what do the figures reveal about the shipping segments or perhaps the regions of the world that are likely to become first movers on ammonia?
Well, it's what it reveals is that the first movers are those that are going to be transporting ammonia as an energy vector. So that's what ammonia carriers are doing. And with regards to the regions, it is where we have infrastructure developing for receiving ammonia as an energy vector. So that is Japan, that is parts of Europe, etc., etc.
Now, on the production side, the majority of the ammonia production today goes to fertilizers. Is there an appetite from producers to supply the shipping industry? What conversations are taking place right now between producers and potential maritime off-takers?
The development of low-carbon ammonia, the production of low-carbon ammonia, can be divided into two parts: transitional plants and low-emission plants. And transitional plants have reduced emissions, but via pathways that may not be consistent with net zero. So that can, for example, be they have a byproduct, fossil hydrogen, or something called enhanced oil recovery pathways. And transitional plants can also include projects based on gas reformation with partial carbon capture storage, etc. And low emission plants, they include a variety of technology pathways. So that could be water electrolysis, gas reformation with carbon capture storage, and it can be something called methane pyrolysis. But referring to AEA here, they believe that by 2030, we could have almost 50 million tons of low carbon ammonia in production, and 6 million tons of that would be of this transitional capacity. 6 million tons is the transitional capacity today, and it's looking to double in 2030. But when we look on this low carbon ammonia, it's very different. So the production today is only about 1 million tons, but in 2030, it's expected to grow to 30 million. So it's like a times 30 growth, and transitional is only double. So further to that, the data is showing that the transitional capacity mainly is serving existing markets, which includes fertilizers. So when we look at all that, I don't think there is much to suggest that the fertilizer industry is going to be the growth market for low emission ammonia. But then you could ask yourself, okay, so these 30 million tons of low emission ammonia that is expected to be available by 2030, is that earmarked for shipping? And in some cases, that's definitely true. I mean, we have several projects that are being developed only to serve the maritime industry. But the big bulk of this development, I don't think, is earmarked for maritime. It serves to support the energy sector. So ammonia is going to be that hydrogen vector to decarbonize land-based energy sectors. And where that ammonia is going is going to be into ammonia cracking, ammonia for power projects, and ammonia for heat projects.
So is there an appetite from producers to actually supply the shipping industry, or are they focusing their energies on those land-based industries that you referred to just now?
If we look at the appetite for the producers to serve the industry, I think the ammonia industry has appetite to serve any industry. But the the investment is going into ammonia for energy. The investment is going into serve regions with transported hydrogen as ammonia. So ammonia is a hydrogen vector here. And for the ammonia sector to kind of circle in and serve the marine sector only, it doesn't work like that. But the ammonia industry is very interested to understand the emerging demand from marine. And they are interested to understand how they can sell their product as a marine fuel. And they are very engaged in that part. But it's just not working like that. The ammonia industry is not kind of developing their ammonia for the marine market as a choice. In very few cases, they are.
Why is that? Is that because the demand signals from shipping are not strong enough?
Yeah, you can say that, but also that the demand from marine is not what is driving investment. The development is driven by the decarbonization of land-based industries.
And now we know the importance of production pathways. What is the capacity to scale up blue and green ammonia production? And on what timeline do you anticipate them to be available beyond sort of one-to-one offtake agreements between producers and the first users in shipping?
I don't have a crystal ball that is better than anybody else. But if we look at the key enablers from the ammonia production sector, they need, as you mentioned, they need to have concrete demand, they need to have regulatory certainty, and also they need to have like successful permitting of the plants to be built, right? But if it's true what I said just a minute ago, that the lion's share of low carbon ammonia is destined to decarbonize the land-based energy sectors, what I'm kind of coming at here is that the maritime industry needs to get involved where these investments are happening, and they need to be interested to take on a share of that risk. And so where is that happening then? Well, if we look at Europe, we have Belgium, Germany, the Netherlands, and UK. They are looking to import ammonia for energy applications. And Rotterdam is the largest port in Europe with regards to energy. I think I have seen a number of 13% of all the energy that is utilized in Europe comes from Port of Rotterdam. And as we know, Rotterdam is a very important bunkering hub in Europe. And so this is a hotspot region. And this is an example of where, yeah, that's exactly where shipping companies need to lean in and look at where can they co-invest and share risk. And this made me reflect also on maritime green corridors, because as a concept, I think they are great and I have much belief in it. But the reality right now, when we look at the data, I don't think there is even one green corridor that is operational today. And so building on that logical argument, then I would urge every ship owner or investor who may be listening to this now to have a think about where they should involve and where they should invest to de-risk their decarbonization pathway.
Now, we know that being able to trace and prove any fuel's life cycle emissions will be critical under the IMO Net Zero Framework, which will assess them on a well-to-wake basis. How do you expect traceability and certification frameworks for ammonia to be developed? And do you think that the industry's current efforts are sufficient?
Well, the frameworks for traceability and certification, they will be outlined in the IMO LCA guideline. And much of that work will be on the shoulders of GESAMP, the much respected group of specialists at the IMO. And in addition to that, I know that the ammonia sector is gathering to develop robust certification from well to gate, where they are acknowledging the different legal interpretations around the world, what zero actually means, and thereby like from where and how do you start counting? And unfortunately, that is not legally defined in the same way across the world. When it comes to, you know, your question about are the industry's current efforts sufficient, I don't think that we will see many complete net zero bunkering purchases by the industry in the future, because there will be a mix. I hope that we will see a lot of low emission bunkering purchases. And what I mean here is that the ammonia will be sold with a very varied life cycle carbon footprint. And for this market to exist long term, we need robust protocols for controlling and certifying the carbon content. This is an absolute must. And if the industry's efforts are sufficient, I think that the MEPC coming up now in October is going to be critical for how this sector is developing. And we need to get an agreement that clarifies the road ahead. And the bunkering industry overall, I see very little, if any, real efforts by kind of the... I sit, for example, in the European board of IBIA, the International Bunker Industry Association. So I'm taking part in those conversations there. And the main focus right now is, you know, on a general level to ensure that we have confidence in the transparency of the bunkering process, that we are able to have trust in the system. But the kind of the operational challenges and the readiness for bunkering of ammonia, that's very niche. That's not happening at any kind of scale at the moment.
And how would you assess the current efforts or current initiatives by the bunkering industry to prepare to deliver ammonia on ships and do so safely?
So if we look at the development of LNG as a bunkering fuel, there was a lot of skepticism at the start if it was possible to do this safely. And that was mainly due to the flammability of LNG. And as we have seen, the solution evidently was to design systems that are leak safe. And I believe that the capacity of the industry, the knowledge and expertise of the industry is absolutely going to be able to deliver leak safe ammonia fuel and bunkering systems too. I'm absolutely sure in that. And it gives us confidence also to see that we have these trials being executed. We know about the ship-to-ship demonstration in Rotterdam in April, and we have the ship-to-ship transfers in Pilbara, and we have truck-to-ship transfers in Dalian and Yokohama, and we have shore-to-ship transfer in Singapore. So there is a lot of good progress on the technology side. But I think we need to pay much more attention to the opinions we receive from crew on board and crew on shore. And we need to focus much more on crew training and building confidence that this can be done safely and how it is to be done safely. But to just re-emphasize that I have absolute confidence that we can create safe design systems regarding this.
I want to look into the development of market, if you will. So what do you think is the best approach to solving that chicken and egg problem by which fuel production won't scale up for shipping, at least until there's demand from the maritime sector, and ships using ammonia as fuel won't be built unless there's certainty of fuel supplies? So what kind of approach makes more sense in your view? Is it to focus on specific regions or focus on specific trades or green corridors, for example?
It's very exhausting to have this chicken and egg conversation because it comes up very often in conversation. And so apart from this obvious opportunity to build ammonia-fueled ammonia carriers, my message is that shipping companies need to partner up. I see countless of small and medium-sized shipping companies who are completely at loss what to do in the energy transition, whether that is ammonia or something else. And so they are instead reverting to inaction, or they are focusing on quick wins. And I come back to the point I made earlier that shipping companies need to look at strategic partnerships, and they need to look at that from kind of a cluster perspective. Where is infrastructure being developed for ammonia import? Are there opportunities for cross-industrial synergies? And those synergies, I think, are more likely to take place or appear in a regional approach. So where we can kind of solve several problems for a region at the same time, investment can come from across industry sectors. And we can gather stakeholders that are looking to use ammonia as an energy source or a low carbon commodity. That's what I like to see more of. And I think that is the kind of the lowest risk approach that I can identify. And it kind of also boils down to the companies need to have a more long-term view on strategy. And this is something that is overall important in this transition of this industry. We need to look at long term. And they need to ask themselves or remind themselves why they are pursuing low carbon fuel options at all. Is it only to stay compliant? Or is it also to stay resilient in a world that is challenged by planetary health decline?
you invite maritime companies to enter strategic partnerships. What does that mean in practice? Is that to already sign long-term offtake agreements, for example?
We have a couple of interesting examples that I have identified in the Nordics, in maybe most visibly Norway, where you have fuel suppliers, cargo owners, shipping companies, you have energy companies, fishing companies. You have in Denmark example of Danish Crown, a producer of bacon, that are collaborating with maritime to de-risk investment of renewable energy. And so shipping companies need to look at the ecosystem they are operating within and ecosystems that are adjacent to them. So they need to look upstream, where does the energy come from? And they need to look downstream, what are the clients that we are supporting? And they need to look kind of across industries to see what other industries have similar challenges that we have and look for ways to de-risk that entire value chain or value ecosystem.
We often hear about the role of government funding also in helping de-risk investments. Where would government funding be best invested to encourage the development of ammonia as a marine fuel?
Well, Ariane, I don't want to pretend that I am advising governments on how they should invest, but I would say that overall, they should look at regions where there is abundant and sustainable access to cheap renewable energy and where there are these viable synergies between sectors, between the land-based energy demand and maritime transport.
But do you think the money would be best invested in, for example, supporting production projects or investments in ships that can use ammonia as a fuel or in paying for that price gap between ammonia and conventional fuels?
I think they should invest in the enabling infrastructure.
Now, what will be the importance of the IMO net zero framework and the guidelines on zero or near zero fuels that will follow in determining whether ammonia will take off as a marine fuel?
I hope it's quite clear from this conversation that the IMO net zero framework and the kind of approval of this is absolutely essential. We need the regulatory certainty. We need a global agreement that the industry must and will decarbonize. And if we don't reach that, and if we kind of revert to markets that are serving under EU regulations or Chinese or American targets, I think there is little chance of seeing a developing market for marine ammonia.
If the IMO net zero framework does get adopted in October, on what timeline do you see ammonia being available and being used as a marine fuel? What could the scenario look like in 2030, 2040, 2050?
Well, I think we need to look at when we have a kind of a conversion between when is the ammonia production coming on stream and where, what vessels are on order, what does the strategies look like from these shipping companies and from the cargo owners, what are the deadlines that they set and what are they working towards. We can see that ammonia production-wise is coming on stream. We are not as far developed in the bunkering infrastructure, and we are still kind of fumbling around as to where is ammonia as a marine fuel gonna kind of, where is it gonna develop? Are we gonna have like a hub? Is that gonna be developing around Rotterdam, for example? Then we could assume that we're gonna both have the fleet of short sea shipping and service vessels around there who may be picking up on this. And we may have some of the liner fleets picking up on it as well. But I think we need to kind of triangulate between the kind of the timelines that production and infrastructure is developing. And I think the order books and the number of vessels that are being built on this is secondary. And also they have a much shorter timeline. It takes much longer to develop capacity, to develop the fuel production and to develop the infrastructure. And we need to therefore look at the trends for ammonia import as an energy vector. And then I'm quite confident that if the maritime industry can gather, can co-invest, can agree what good looks like, can agree what why they are doing this, I'm quite confident that we will be able to have ammonia as a marine fuel available in key ports for bunkering at least 2035, at least, definitely so.
Thank you very much, Sophia.
Thank you so much, Ariane. It was a pleasure being here with you today, and I hope this has been interesting for the listeners.